Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Alrighty, hour number two. What's happening? Tiki and Tierney. It's the Tiki and Tierney Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Simulcast on CBS Sports Network. And we're coming from our Rocket Mortgage studio. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. So we will get to AD, who dropped 42 in a big win over the Suns. The Lakers right on that cut line. They're in the seventh spot right now. Remember, they lost to the Blazers on Friday, and then they came back, beat the Suns. Didn't really think they would do that, but they did do that. And, you know, listen, we'll get to the conversation. I think it's a really fascinating one because other NBA players we can pull into this, which we certainly will for historical purposes. And, you know, Anthony Davis has been around a long time now, and when he's been the guy, just the guy, his teams have done nothing.
That's right.
And I'm a huge fan, but is he not a lead dog? As crazy as that sounds, because he's one of the top, easily top 10 players in basketball when he's healthy, we'll have that discussion. Okay, also, we'll get into this. Brandon Bean of the Bills, their GM, Tika was out, and I wanted to get back to this with you. He brought up about how basically they'll cut players, or they could cut players if they do not vaccinate.
Yeah, that's a little reckless, but
we'll get to it. I got to get your thoughts on that as a former player. I got one thought there, but I want you to expand, obviously. All right. So, listen, if you listen to the show for a long time, you will notice one main difference when it comes to our, you know, assertions pertaining to Kirk Cousins. Tiki likes him.
Yep.
And I don't.
I think it's because I like him. I like him like him.
Yeah. I like him like him too as a person. That, I was just messing
probably
around.
Not going to have some drinks with him, but I like him like
I don't know
him.
If he drinks. I think he's a very religious
That's why I'm saying that.
Yeah, I think he's a wholesome dude, a great person. I don't think there's a bad bone in his body. He's a pretty good quarterback. But, you know, I've drawn the line where and I think you have as well, to be fair. It's not like Tiki's on the air for 7-8 years now. Oh, this guy's going to Super Bowl.
Kirk Cousins is winning a Super Bowl in Minnesota.
No, I've never heard him say that.
Said I never.
No, yeah, nor have I ever heard you say that when he was in Washington.
No.
And listen, he is really literally the definition of average in terms of, we're talking about Jacob deGrom, win-loss, which obviously is antiquated. But in the NFL, quarterbacks, that's really the ultimate measurement. Did you win or did you lose? And he's won 51 games. He's lost 51. And I believe he's got two ties. So, quite literally, average. Steps on the field, he wins, and then he loses, then he wins, and he loses.
Yeah, you're right.
You know?
And the only way you get elevated above average when you're average, win-loss like that, and statistically, he's a little bit above average, but is if you win Super Bowls, like Eli, right?
Correct.
Eli was, what was his, 117? And one, I forget what it was, but whatever it was.
That's right.
It was equal, right? He won and lost. Now, all those losses weren't on him.
No.
Because the Giants were pretty putrid for a couple of years when he was the starting quarterback.
Yeah, he wasn't helping matters a ton, though.
True, but it wasn't. It's not like you put it all on him.
No, for sure.
Not that you could do that with anybody, but Kirk Cousins doesn't have the championships or the Super Bowl MVPs like Eli Manning does. So you almost get like forced into looking at him statistically as opposed to, well, he did this. There's this this intangible that he is able to accomplish in the postseason that elevates him a little bit more over than what his record would pretend.
No, that's very fair. You know, I can't prove this, but in my gut, and I think a lot of the conviction within a locker room and the I don't mean what they say out what they put out there for public consumption. Yeah, I mean sometimes you gotta say the right thing. But I think if you really polled every Viking in that locker room and they were asked about Kirk Cousins, I can't prove this. I think that they would say that the maybe not the consensus, but more than not would say love him as a teammate, reliable personality.
Yep.
You know, I don't see him leading us to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I know what I'm getting on Sundays, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But
not the guy who's going to lead us to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's right.
If they're being honest with themselves.
Yeah, here's the biggest thing, BT. Because I look at his numbers and I'm like, man, dude, like he led the league in completion percentage 1 year at 69, almost 70% back in 2015.
What was his yard per average?
His yards per completion.
Was it about above 8?
Yeah, 7.7. And it wasn't like hugely above 8, but that's his career average, by the way. In the last couple of years, he's been above 8. Yeah. And his completion percentage has been 69% in 2019. Last year, it was 67.5%. In 2020. And so, like, statistically, you look at him, you're like, all right, he's got a pretty good resume. Mm-hmm. All right, those for 4,000 yards, you know, almost every single season. And back in 2016, he threw for almost 5,000 yards, 35 touchdowns, to 13 interceptions. My point is, you throw all these numbers out there, you're like, Kirk Cousins is a pretty damn good quarterback.
I got $30 million.
That's exactly why I got $30 million. But then you go look, and you're like, yeah, but that's 7-9.
Yep.
There's that 1-10-5 season in there, but 8-7, 7-9, 8-7, 9-7. I mean, it's like, where is the success that should be following all these statistics? And it comes down to something that I think every quarterback has to master in order to be considered elite, BT. It's a simple measure. No one ever looks at it until you get to a point where you start to debate how good a guy really is relative to the team he's on. And that's fourth quarter comebacks. At some point, BT, every quarterback is going to be down in a game. Yeah. And you know this when we see Tom Brady. Tom Brady's down in the fourth quarter by 5 points. You know he's going down and scoring a touchdown. Right, you're not even like it's not even a question.
Yeah.
It's going to be all right. Will the defense hold once he scores?
Yes.
And you know, will they be able to hold on to that lead? Same thing with Aaron Rodgers. Heck, even Eli.
I was going to say even Eli led the league in that category.
That's
at least twice.
You look at him like, all right, we got the rock.
Yep.
I know Eli's going down the field and we're scoring.
I don't disagree with that.
If the defense can't hold, then that's on the defense. I can't put that on Eli, and that's why I think he's got some elevation above his statistics at least. His win-loss statistics. Kirk Cousins, over the last 4 years, BT?
Yeah.
He's got four cumulative fourth quarter comebacks over the last 4 years.
And it's not like they win 13, 14 games a year, so you can say, well, maybe they're not down that often in the fourth quarter. When you're basically .500,
that's
right. You're going to be down a lot in the fourth quarter.
That's exactly right. This erases the conversation around the statistic, because the stats don't matter when you have a drive left or two drives left in the fourth quarter. It's all about, can I get it done? Am I the leader that's going to manufacture the comeback that's going to get us this much-needed victory? Because every game in the NFL is tight. I mean, I know that we look at some of these lines, and it's like, oh, wow, that's a crazy line. You got to these come down to one score. Like, almost every week, it's like a score, whether it's a field goal, whether it's a touchdown. And there's just that intangible, the other ones I was talking about, but this is the one that I think matters the most. And this stat is lacking for Kirk Cousins. And, you know, I don't know where to point to, where to say that this causes this. Mm-hmm. And there's just an it factor that really above average quarterbacks have, and he just doesn't have it in the fourth quarter.
He just doesn't have it. He just doesn't have it. I don't see him. He doesn't have a great arm. Mm-hmm. He's fine. You know, he doesn't have a great arm. He's not a great athlete at all. He's not a big physical imposing presence. He's average. I don't think he's a dynamic leader, despite when he yelled at ownership, you like that?
Yeah.
You know, I just think that he kind of blends in. And blending in is good for harmony for the most part. Well, for consistency, but blending in is not necessarily good when you're trying to win a championship.
It works if you have an elite defense. And I think for the last few years, there was a thought that, all right, with Mike Zimmer as our head coach, with one of the top, two or three, sometimes top five defenses in the NFL, we don't need a world beater at quarterback. We just need the guy that's not going to mess it up and at times be elite. And that's Kirk Cousins. But that hasn't been the Minnesota Vikings over the last couple of years. Their defense has faltered. And so it's a little bit perplexing when you hear Rick Spielman talk about this.
I spoke to him Saturday morning, him, and talked to his agent and just let him know that we want to make sure we have competition behind him. That there's no doubt Kirk's our quarterback going forward. And that, you know, we want to create competition to see who's going to be the backup. And no, Kirk was great. He understands, and he knows he's our guy. His agent knows he's our guy. So right now we're just focusing on getting ready for this season coming up.
Was Pro Football Talk PM with Mike Florio, BT, by the way.
And Spielman. I got it. I don't take anything that he just said seriously.
Yeah, I don't either.
I'm not calling him a liar.
Here's the thing, though, BT.
It means nothing.
When I first heard what he was saying, and it's like, I just want to, we drafted Kellen Mond. We called Kirk Cousins Saturday morning, and we told him, I just want there to be competition. I was like, oh, hell yeah.
Yes.
Right? That's what you do. Right, you draft a kid in the second round. Like, you draft a kid and you say, all right, it's not really your job, but there's a guy here. We want you to compete with him. And then he keeps talking. He should have just stopped. He said, we got to have competition for the backup job. I was like, oh, you just killed it.
Yeah.
Right? You just killed the vibe. Because what Kirk Cousins needs is someone to push him to make him better. Right, to take those risks in the fourth quarter that sometimes will come back to haunt you, right, with your completion percentage and maybe even your interceptions, but will give you a better chance of winning some of these fourth quarter games where you're down. And so the fact that he said the right thing, but then qualified it for the backup and not for the starting quarterback and Kirk Cousins, that's where he lost me a little bit.
Well, listen, Teak, we've had, I mean, countless conversations about every quarterback situation in the NFL.
Yeah.
Everyone we've addressed. I mean, whether it was a team getting ready to draft somebody early,
yep,
whether it was a contract situation like Dak, whether it was judging the progress of somebody like Daniel Jones or Sam Darnold, these things resolve themselves.
Yeah.
No matter what we say, and I'd like to think that in real time our takes are instinctual and intuitive and on point and to hopefully entertaining and interesting, but it doesn't mean that it's not going to change.
Yeah.
And all it takes is, you know, a rocky September. I mean, this might not happen, but if they're 1-3, you're right, because their defense is not what it was. If the Vikings are 1-3 and Mond is flipping it well in practice and moving around a little bit. And
by the way, third round pick.
I thought you said second. I wasn't correct.
Yeah,
I thought it was third, but I got you. I just think that you're going to start to hear some whispers. I don't know. This young man looks pretty good in practice. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And then you start hearing the boos, right? You start hearing boos in Minnesota if this comes to fruition. And if that's the case, Spielman's a football guy. He's a lifer.
Yep.
Zimmer's a lifer. Zimmer's job, I believe, is in peril this year because I thought it was a little bit of peril last year.
Yep.
And by extension, Spielman's got to start getting this right. If Kirk Cousins ain't playing well, he's going to the bench.
Yeah.
I don't care what he said to Mike Florio, period.
It is what it is.
Doesn't matter.
It's the meritocracy that is necessary in the NFL. Now, I know that Kirk Cousins, I haven't looked at his contract recently because I know he just did an extension. So it's a little bit punitive to move on from him.
Yeah.
But not to the point where it's
Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's just going to hamstring you. So I think they have to make the decision based on who's best for the future of the franchise right now, because it's getting to that point where don't you feel like the Vikings have become stagnant?
No, they're not stagnant. I believe the Vikings are now regressing. Last year they felt stagnant. Against the Niners in the playoff when they were horrendous 2 years ago.
Yes.
That's when I felt stagnation. Like, okay, they've hit their ceiling as a group.
Okay.
And then I thought there was regression last year, the horrendous start. I don't know. I don't have the bold expectations for the Vikings. I'm not saying they're going to be 5-11, but if they were 6-10 or 7-9, would I be stunned? I wouldn't be stunned.
Yeah, I think I probably gave them the benefit of the doubt last year because of the talent they lost on the defensive side of the ball, and they had to rebuild it. So they were really young, some first-time players playing in this new system, and it was like, okay. We'll see what happens in the following year. But either way, there was a point where in my mind, I would say, God, the Vikings, if Kirk Cousins just plays up to snuff and their defense holds their own, the Vikings are viable, man. They consistently in the postseason, they consistently somehow beat the New Orleans Saints, right? The Minnesota Vikings have a chance to be a Super Bowl type contender over the next couple of years. And then it just kind of flatlined for
yes.
me. And it's now sitting there, and to your estimation, it's actually dipped. But I don't see it right now with the Minnesota Vikings. I'm not saying they don't have talent, because they do have talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Justin Jefferson and Dalvin Cook.
Stud.
They're studly.
Thielen.
That's good players, skilled position players. But something just feels like plateaued there.
It might be the quarterback.
And it could be.
Back to Kirk
Cousins.
It could be.
But
he's
again,
not dynamic.
But again, you look at the stats, and it's like.
Forget about the stats.
I agree.
I just
went through it, BT. You look at the stats, you're like, okay. But then you look at the results, and you're like, you're just scratching your head a little bit.
You know what it's like? If you're big baseball fans, will get this. You'll appreciate it. There's certain guys, like, listen, every team's closer gets 30 saves.
Yeah.
Just by the sheer totality of the season.
Yeah.
If he's healthy, 162 games. Even if you're a dreadful team and you win, I don't know, 74 games and you're 6, 7, 8 games below the break-even point, you're still going to have a high volume of save situations, right? So they'll 28 saves. Oh, maybe he should be on the All-Star. Every team needs somebody. Maybe he's the All-Star. But then if you actually watch the guy, You just know that, first at bat, bloop hit, then a walk. He's going to have to wiggle the tightrope. It's not
down
Mariano.
Down in the zone. Play balls.
Correct.
Not striking anybody out.
Too many balls in play. Here comes the pitching coach. Let's calm him down. Like, you just know it's not going to be like Mariano mowing you down or Bruce Sutter or any of the old-time Goose Gossage back in the day. It's just they'll walk the tightrope and, 80-something percent of the time they'll get the save, because to get a save is a relatively easy thing to do based on what is required to actually get the save, much like it's pretty easy to get some yards in the NFL throwing the football.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
You say he's got 4,000 yards, I say big deal.
Yeah.
Everybody's got 4,000 yards.
And then 2020, and last year, now 2021, this year, 4,000 almost feels like, that's it?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. A little bit.
By the way, 1 year left on this deal. So this year, 2021, and then 2022 for Kirk Cousins.
Okay.
His cap hit next year is, and it's dead, unfortunately, is $45 million.
Whoa.
So it's a big dead number for next year.
All right, well, let's get to this coming up next year, T. We know the story about NFL players fighting hard, weighing in against the offseason programs. Well, the biggest star in the NFL weighed in. Is he unfairly applying pressure to the young guys in the league? This is a big story. We'll get to that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Tom Brady putting himself out on a perch here. We're going to get to him in a moment, but this is pretty interesting here, Teak. So we talked about Timmy Tebow. Timmy, the Jaguars are planning to sign quarterback turned tight end Tim Tebow to a 1-year deal. All right. We have a couple of people weighing in, Rappaport and Tom Pelissero. A deal that could be official in the next week or so. Nothing done yet, but he'll have a real shot to make the team and reunite with his mentor and college head coach, Urban Meyer. So, with that, how about this? The last time Tim Tebow appeared in an NFL game, you ready for a couple of things?
Yeah.
Joe Flacco was the MVP of the Super Bowl. Calvin Johnson had a record 1,964 yards. Out of the league, obviously.
Wow. What year was this? 2012?
2012, yep.
Yeah.
RG3 was Offensive Rookie of the Year, and Adrian Peterson rushed for almost 2,100 yards. That's the last time Timmy played in a football game.
Wow.
I think he's going to make the team.
Good for him, man.
Yeah, I got no problem with it.
Yeah,
I think he's going to make the team.
I'm not hating on this like some people are hating on this.
No, it's easy to hate on Tim. We don't do that. He's a great guy.
Exactly.
If he says something stupid, we'll react to it, but I have no reason to hate on Tim. I like Tim Tebow.
I agree. But here's the reality. I keep seeing this stuff like, he should have played tight end the whole time. Dude, he was a great college quarterback. He didn't make it in the NFL because the NFL is hard, and if you have a slow release and you played a college offense that was predicated on positioning as opposed to actually reading, you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
And he struggled. And so he wanted to play quarterback. Give him a chance to play quarterback. He failed. A lot of guys do. Did you see that list of Ohio State quarterbacks in the NFL?
I didn't see it, but I'm pretty intimately aware of it. But dude, run through some stuff. Go ahead.
I think it was on CBS. CBS's Twitter.
Okay.
Maybe it was Instagram. I can't remember which one it was. CBS Sports is
CBS
Instagram.
On the old IG.
Yeah, on the IG. And probably it was, I don't know, I can't remember which one I was looking at. But anyways, it was just like listing all of the quarterbacks from Tom Tupa to Kim.
Former punter, too, yeah, in the NFL.
Well, he made it in the NFL because he swept. He went the punter.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I remember Tom well. He was on the Jets.
From Kent Graham to Dwayne Haskins, like all these guys. Yeah. And none of them, zero Pro Bowls. And so they were talking about, obviously Justin Fields, how he's going to change the narrative of Ohio State quarterbacks. The same thing could be said for some of these Florida quarterbacks, BT.
Yeah.
It just is what it is. The systems haven't been pro conducive, let's put it that way.
No stock in that, though.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
I get why you do it for Instagram. You get some looks. It's interesting. Kind of run through history. I get it.
Oh, it doesn't mean anything at all.
Means nothing.
Yeah.
Means nothing. Yeah. I have never been, whether it's Duke players have had more success in the NBA recently, but mm-hmm. whether it was back in the day after some of their marquee players stumbled in the NBA. Oh, he went to Duke. Listen, does he have the skill set? I mean, if he's got the skill set, he's going to be good. I don't care that he went to Duke. So I've never leaned on this guy's from so-and-so and they don't have the pedigree. To me, that's lazy. When you actually hold it that punitively against a young man based on where he went to school. I mean, how many quarterbacks were coming out of Oregon before Dan Fouts came out and made the Hall of Fame?
And then how many came out after until Marcus Mariota?
Harrington was the third pick. He stunk.
Oh, that's right.
Harrington was number three, but I was in Detroit when he was drafted. I mean, I saw that. The Lions, obviously Mariota, we'll see. Maybe he's got a second phase here, a little renaissance like our buddy Rich Gannon. But listen, I never lumped that stuff together.
No,
it's not wise to do.
It's not relatable.
But it's fun to look at.
Yeah, it's not, what is it? It's not causation or correlation or whichever one it is.
One of the two, come on. And by the way, I mean, are you going to say anything about Virginia ladies? I mean, I'm getting hit up
BT,
on Twitter.
I saw it. I just hit you back on Twitter because your boy tweeted at you and said, tell Tiki his team is in the semifinal now. So of course I know. This BT,
okay, but
because you made me aware of it.
But
so
before
now
you
I
saw
see.
The tweet today, did you know that?
Yeah, of course.
All right.
Lizzie Seracki, she headed it in as her first goal of the season. In the 60th minute, 1-0 lead over victory, I should say.
TCU.
It was for the lead, but 1-0 victory over TCU, and now they play Florida State.
Look, first goal
of
the
season.
I got a dumb question. You know, I'm not a huge soccer
guy. She's a defender.
Oh, I was going to say. Why is she shooting on the 60th minute when she hasn't scored a goal all year?
So sometimes the defenders come up and support, and so she just happened to be there it was a set piece. BT, you love when I say set pieces.
Yeah, here we go.
It was a corner kick. Great. It was a great placement on the corner kick.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Beat the goalie by a mile, or was it a tight one?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, she came from behind the defender. She came from behind, front of the defender. So think about being a basketball player. She's in front of the defender.
Got it.
And then headed it in. The goalie had no shot.
Oh, so
sick. It was great.
The Who's are rolling. All right. So Tom Brady's now weighing in about these offseason workouts.
Tommy boy. Hey, Tommy, how much money have you made in your career?
Yeah. He just bought a $6 million yacht. Maybe more. I think it was maybe more than that. He just added to his collection.
I just saw someone else bought a yacht, too. And this is an aside. And it was
stupid. Don't tell me
A-Rod. No. Okay, this is like stupid money guy. I think it was Bezos. It must have been Bezos.
Okay. What did he pay
for it? $500 million. Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? A $500 million yacht.
What do you, what's
like,
on
why?
It?
I don't know. Is it like a floating house?
$500 million.
It was ridiculous.
I mean, I've got a pretty vivid imagination. I don't even know what I can string together to come up with a $500 million yacht.
I got to see who this was.
Are you sure it's $500 million?
I'm telling you, man. I read it and I was
Does like, that, can, on it?
That cannot be the right number.
Wow.
Let's see. Oh, maybe it was. No, it wasn't Gates. Was it Gates?
Did you see Musk on SNL? I don't really watch SNL. I didn't see it.
Yes.
Did he do well?
Here it is. He admitted that he has Asperger's, BT. Elon Musk.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah. It was actually really. He did a
because the reviews were terrible.
Job. Yeah, but he.
Not surprisingly.
It was interesting because who he is.
Yeah.
Like he's kind of out of. Touch, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, I thought when it was he came out to start the monologue, was there any humor? Was it serious? Like
he was trying to be funny, but it's just not. He's just not funny.
So that's what I'm saying. So the reviews were pretty scathing. They weren't that inaccurate. He didn't do a good job.
Yeah, you have to take it with an understanding of who he is.
Okay, gotcha.
All right, here it is. I just found this.
What is it?
Jeff Bezos' $500 million yacht, I wasn't wrong, comes with its own yacht.
Comes with a country.
Exactly.
Its this own is, yacht. What is, else is on this thing? Come this on, hit is, me up. Make me I'm lament what I don't have.
The glass says
I wouldn't even want that. I wouldn't even need that.
Yeah.
Who the hell needs that? A yacht within a yacht.
I don't know. BP.
I mean, that's just stupid.
It probably has a helipad.
Oh, that's a
given. It's 470.
It's got a helipad next to the toilet.
Yeah, get right. It? 417 feet long. Has several decks. I'm assuming probably like 8.
Yeah.
It's you purchased it 2 years ago, and it's nearing completion. I'm trying to get at the other details.
Do you have square footage? No, I don't know if they list that. They just list how long it is.
But I mean, if you're worth that much,
oh,
I guess,
I hear you.
Like, does it even matter?
But how many? Well,
you got to spend your money somewhere, right? Does it even matter?
And he's charitable, so it's not like you said we'll give it to charity. He's very charitable with that. Yeah. But what, how often are you gonna live on it?
It's built and being built in the Netherlands.
Okay.
It's the largest sailing yacht ever built. Will be one of the largest ever built. The project is known as Y721.
Okay.
And it's a closely guarded secret. So that's why they don't have the details of what's actually going to be in it.
I couldn't be at sea that long. And I love, like, before we had kids, certainly our honeymoon and every trip we took, we love, like you and Trace, the islands. We love being out, the ocean, the sand, you know, just the vibrant. I feel a lot. I wouldn't want to be at sea that long.
I know.
Honestly.
I'd be scared, man.
I'd be bored.
Yeah, that too. What are you going to do? Jump and swim in the ocean?
I'd just hit golf balls off the top deck. Right? Just fire them.
Stop polluting, BT. Stop polluting.
Biodegradable balls. The ones from Vice.
But how are you going to know how far it goes?
Like,
you're going to whack it off into the ocean and it's like.
Hey, take it easy, buddy. I'm going to know how far, like, all my shots go. Not very, because they don't go straight. Why are my kids trying to come into my office right now? So what is Tom Brady? I get it. I'm all about.
Yeah. Well, this one is of actually the stars, an important story.
It is. One of the stars, you know, showing leadership, but he's flexing on some of the younger kids in a way that could be misconstrued. So as a former player, what's your take on this?
So he makes a very good point, and I never even thought about it this way because I actually liked being around the guys in the offseason and going to the facility and working out and getting strong. You know me, I'm vain like that, right?
Yes.
So I didn't mind it, and I loved learning. So if we had, say, a new offense being put in, I loved being ahead of it before we got to our OTAs and our training camp, mini camps, and then ultimately to training camp. And so I enjoyed it. But what Tom said makes a lot of sense. He said, if you are a baseball player, you're not like starting to warm up, like throwing 95 miles an hour in December.
Nope.
You know what I mean? You're not.
You're long tossing in December.
Maybe you're long. Like if you maybe you're just chilling. Yeah,
from flat ground for sure.
Yeah.
Not even off a mound.
Whereas in the NFL, you go to these like off-season workouts and it's like, all right, even though you don't have pads on, it's like, all right, we're going full speed. Like I want to see you hustle, you know, sprint all the way to. And so it kind of is facilitating injury before guys' bodies are ready to be at that level, right?
Okay.
You go from nothing to 100%. And so we saw this last offseason that guys don't really need that to have productive and successful seasons because there was no offseason workout program. Yeah, there were some major injuries, but that happens every year, whether in the offseason program or not. The challenge, and this is where we get to the money side of this, and I needed to look this up, Tom Brady has made $298 million in his career so far. But there are first, second, third year guys who maybe were fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round picks who didn't make that much money. And they need to go to these offseason workouts because maybe they're going to make $1,000 a week.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it means more than just the physical side. It's like they're living, like they're making an offseason living by going there and working out. But without solidarity, so without the rich guys and the less affluent football players being lockstep with, you know, not working out, then the union has no standing ground. They have nowhere to stand on.
Yeah, for sure.
And so
they got to represent the richest to the poorest.
That's exactly right. So that's the challenge that the players are gonna have with this. Let's boycott the offseason, because a lot of guys that actually want to go participate in the offseason workout.
Yeah, I probably would have been one of those guys too. Go in there, have a dip, kick it with the guys. I hear you. Get your work in.
Get a workout in. Go sit
routine oriented.
Chill. Yeah, you're right.
Stay in a routine.
That's exactly right. And that's actually one of the biggest benefits of it, BT.
Yeah.
You know you're not going to get in trouble. You know you're not off somewhere doing something. Maybe your hometown. Who knows what it is.
I know what you're saying.
Right?
You're reeled in a little bit.
You have a responsibility, and it makes your job, even though it's not, it's only a, whatever it is, a 10-month, 8-month, 9-month job, it makes it a 12-month job.
Now, real quick, does he need to circle back to give a little bit more thought to the others who would be adversely affected by this?
Yeah, maybe. But I think the bigger issue is on the union as they try to figure out how to keep, make this a year-round job for some of these guys, right? As opposed to and not going to the club might be a part of it, right? They might not be mutually exclusive. Like you can go and show up, but you can't go 100%. You know what I mean? You can only be on the field for this amount of time, and it's a walk-through speed as opposed to being full speed in the off season.
Gotcha. All right. Let's get an update here, Teak. We've got that from our buddy Ryan McDonough, former NBA GM, is going to join us next. Hey, listen, next week at the play-ins, this is the final week of the NBA regular season. A lot of stories to hit, and we'll do that with Ryan coming up next after Ack. Here's Ack's update. All right, Teak and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network on this Monday. Do some hoops here. Ryan McDonough, former NBA general manager, joins us in a moment. First up, though, time for doing more. Brought to you by the Home Depot. The Home Depot makes all spring things possible. Use the Home Depot mobile app to put over 2 million products in the palm of your hands. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. Rangers outfielder, young kid, Adolis Garcia, extends his hitting streak to 8 games. He's playing well. Yesterday, the Rangers, they won. They beat the Mariners 10-2 in the span. He had 4 home runs and driven in. It's about 12 runs, over that that 8-game hitting streak. So he's on, he's hitting with power, and he's putting them on the board too, and raises his average from 233 to 297. So nice run for the young kid. Pretty good outfielder too, defensively. Doing more, brought to you by the Home Depot. All right, T, we'll get to Anthony Davis, and although we might even get to a little AD with Ryan McDonough, who's our guest now, former NBA GM, and Ryan is on Tiki and Tierney. Ryan, it's been a little bit. I think we had you or maybe I joined you guys, I think, with the NBA draft. Whatever it was. Good to have you back on the show. How you doing, buddy?
Tiki, Tierney, great to be on with you guys. And, yeah, Brandon, you did join me on the night of the draft. It seems like that was just the other day. But
Somehow
we wake up this morning and there's only a week left in the NBA regular season.
It's crazy. And I was telling you before the Knicks actually made their pick, I did not want Obi Toppin. I wanted Tyrese Halliburton. Listen, I don't need to turn this into an Obi Toppin segment, but I got to be honest, man. I am surprised that he has looked as lost as he has. Are you?
Well, Obi struggled. There's no doubt about it. I think it's a combination of two things, his individual struggles, but also the great play of Julius Randle. I think when the Knicks front office drafted Toppin, they didn't anticipate that Randle would be an all-NBA player. And in my opinion, he's going to be the runaway winner of most improved player in the league as well.
Yep.
So that certainly helped the team with Randle's play. It's just disadvantaged to some extent Toppin. So I'll be interested to see what the offseason holds for Toppin, if he is potentially in play elsewhere, because Randle's become a star. And I think because of that, and because they're somewhat similar in terms of their games, obviously Randle's a lot more productive than Toppin is this stage in their careers, that Toppin could be the odd man out.
Well, do you give Randle a max contract? I mean, I would, and I've watched almost every Knicks game this year. I love him. He changed his body. He does make other guys better, despite the objections from some. He's a good passer. He's a hell of a three-point shooter. Good free. Like, he's just a borderline great player at this stage now. I'd give him the max. Would you?
Well, he's under contract for one
more
year, so it's a little bit tricky in terms of what they can and can't do, not to get too deep in the weeds with the CBA. But obviously, picking up his option for next year, fully guaranteeing his contract for next year is a no-brainer. I think he's a max or near-max player. I mean, when you look at his age, he's still 26 years old. The two biggest developments for me this year, guys, are the passing that you mentioned. He's about double his career assist average. Coming into the year, he averaged about 3 assists a game. This year, he's just under 6. And then the three-point shooting, when you look historically at the number of guys who have shot 40%+ from three, and then average the points, rebounds, and assists he have, guys. It's a very short list. In fact, I think you can count them on one hand, which is why I'm pretty certain he's going to be not only an all-NBA player, but maybe the most unanimous, most improved player, may win that award in a unanimous fashion as far as the most improved player.
Yeah, it sounds like it. You know, Ryan, we started our show talking about Zion Williamson, and it's unfortunate because he's out for the rest of the season, and we're not going to see the playoff or potential playoff push for the Pelicans. And, you know, there were some complaints that he's getting beat up, and not since we've seen this in Shaq. It's nowhere near what Shaq had to deal with. But does David Griffin have a point about Zion's treatment from the officials, even though he goes to the line a lot? As BT pointed out, fourth number of free throws taken in the NBA this season. So it can't be that bad, can it?
Well, I understand what Griffin was doing. He's trying to protect his player. Obviously, he got hit in the wallet for it. He got a $50,000 fine from the NBA. But I think because Zion's so unique, guys, when you talk to officials around the league and even folks from the league office who oversee the officiating and run the programs for the NBA, they say the most difficult players to officiate are the ones who are so unique. Shaq was obviously unique at 7-foot-plus, 350 pounds, and with as much contact as he initiated and as strong as he was. Allen Iverson, in a different way, small, tough, extremely quick, initiate a lot of contact. So Zion's unique. I think the officials do struggle with that at times. But guys, I don't think that's what's ailing the Pelicans, that Zion Williamson isn't getting calls. I've seen a disjointed team, a team that's really struggled at times closing games and on the defensive end of the court. And for me, they're one of the most disappointing teams in the league. I had high hopes for New Orleans coming into the season, and now, especially with Zion out of the lineup, it looks like they won't even be in the play-in games.
Yeah, I don't know that they have the right coach there, to be honest with you, Ryan. Mm-hmm. Do you?
Well, Stan Van Gundy, I mean, it's certainly been a rocky first year. The pieces haven't meshed. You know, one challenging thing there, guys, where I think Stan probably gets some more time, is they traded one of their best players to Milwaukee and Drew Holiday last offseason. Now, they got a bunch of draft picks and things like that, but frankly, those don't look great in the short term because shortly after the trade with Holiday going to Milwaukee, Giannis agreed to re-sign the 5-year Supermax extension with the Bucks. So now you look at Milwaukee, and if you have their draft pick, you're projecting them to be one of the best teams in the league over the next 5 years because they have Giannis, they have Holiday and Middleton all in place and all under contract for a number of years, which is why, at least in the short term, the return doesn't look great for New Orleans. And I think since it was a forward-looking move, that probably buys Stan some more time as the head coach.
We're talking to Ryan McDonough, former NBA GM. You know, T and I had the conversation the other day. A couple times it's come up over the year, given the abundance of injuries for the Brooklyn Nets here. I mean, they've only had the three stars on the same court, I think, 8 or 9 times. Maybe mm-hmm. still stuck on 7, actually. It's single digits here. It's a question that might not even need to be answered, but I'm curious how you would answer it because I think there's a few ways to go. If you only had your choice for to have two of the three players healthy for whatever run they go on, who do you think what's the best duo? What's the best combination for the Nets?
James Harden and Kevin Durant. And I don't think there's really a question about that with all due respect to Kyrie Irving.
I agree.
Look at how the Nets have played when Harden's been in the lineup versus out of the lineups. They're a sub-500 team since he arrived from Houston when he did not play. He's not played recently. Obviously, the team hasn't played nearly as well. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. They were right in the mix leading the conference. Now they're 3 games back of Philly. So it looks like they will not get the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Yeah, so I think it's clearly Harden, Durant in some order, and then Kyrie's the third guy. However, if Harden's healthy, guys, they are my championship pick. I picked them to play the Lakers and lose in the finals prior to the season, but now that they made the trade with Harden and watching not only the high-end talent but also the depth of that roster and the number of shot creators, I think if Harden gets healthy, Brooklyn should be the favorite and will be the favorite to win the championship.
Well, Ryan, you mentioned the Lakers here, and look, they're scuffled a little bit. Beat tonight about 3 weeks ago. I warned about the dangers of the play-in game. LeBron, I don't know if he's going to be fully healthy come the postseason because it's only a week away. But how concerned are you about the Lakers?
Well, a little bit concerned, Tiki, and I've actually been following the situation closely. LeBron had a very mysterious absence over the last few games. I don't know if you guys saw that late last week, Lakers head coach Frank Vogel, when asked if LeBron's absence was injury-related, he said it was not. Mm-hmm. And that set off some alarms for me. So wait a minute, why, with a week and a half left in the regular season, with a team scratching and clawing to get out of the play-in scenario, to get into the top six in the West to avoid the play-in. Why is LeBron James not playing for a non-medical reason? And in fact, I put that on my Twitter, at McDNBA. Nobody's come up with a good answer yet. So he didn't play last night. There was a huge win by the Lakers against the Phoenix Suns. They've been one of the best teams in the league. Anthony Davis was phenomenal in that game. And reports in the last hour or so out of L.A. that LeBron did practice this afternoon and that he's going to be likely to go tomorrow night. They're playing the New York Knicks at home in a huge game. But look, Lakers need to win to avoid the play-in. Portland has Houston at home tonight. Portland is only a game ahead of the Lakers, but if they win against Houston, who's the worst team in the league and not trying to win, they'll be a game and a half up with just three games left on their schedule. So LeBron James needs to come back, I think, tomorrow and needs to play well and if the Lakers want to avoid the play-in. But looking at the numbers, guys, in the schedule, I think we will see LeBron James and the L.A. Lakers next week as the number seven seed in the play-in scenario.
Well, let me ask you about that play-in game, Ryan. I don't know if you have a consensus on this, but do GMs like this new play-in format?
Well, you know how GMs and coaches and players are. It depends where their team is at the moment. The guys who aren't near the 6-7 line aren't complaining about it. You know, the guys in Utah, Phoenix, Clippers, and Philly, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, they're fine with it. So I think that's why some of the complaints we've heard recently are a little self-serving. We saw Luka Doncic and Mark Cuban a few weeks ago when Dallas was right on that 6-7 line complain about it. Now Dallas has played better, and they moved up to fifth. Although theoretically the Blazers and or Lakers still could catch the Mavs if the Mavs crater. But guys, generally I think it's a good thing. I mean, look at it this way. As I look at the standings in a 30-team league, keep in mind that the season ends on Sunday. We're recording the show Monday afternoon. The season ends a week from now, and only six teams in the 30-team league, Orlando, Cleveland, and Detroit in the East, and Minnesota, Oklahoma City, and Houston in the West, are eliminated. That's what the NBA wanted. They wanted teams playing meaningful basketball. So now you have different races to get in the top four and get home court advantage, to get in the top six and stay out of the play-in scenario. And then within the play-in, there's a difference between being seeded 7 through 10, depending on how many games you have to win and whether you have to do it at home or get to go on the road. So I think what the NBA wanted is working, even if the players on the play-in line don't necessarily like it.
Yeah, mission accomplished. Much like the wild card, NFL's extending the playoff format. More money, more eyeballs. You generate some more enthusiasm in the various towns, the various fan bases. Home run across the board. Ryan, good having you back on the show. Thank you very much, Ryan.
Anytime, guys. Always great to be on with you.
There you go. Ryan McDonough, former NBA general manager. So, I mean, listen, these guys can whine all they want, but it's here to stay. It's not going to go away.
No, it's not. It's made the end of the season so much more interesting.
Yes, I totally agree. I'm with you, Teague. So let's get it. I've really been looking forward to this conversation we're about to have. You know, he's indisputably one of the absolute megastars in the NBA, and that's Anthony Davis, AD. Mm-hmm. But can you make the case that AD's not a lead dog? I mean, can you be one of the best players in the game and not be a lead dog? We'll talk about that. That's next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.